So hopefully you find that data helpful and have a lovely weekend.
This is WGTD. You are listening to Education Matters, the only weekly broadcast in southeastern Wisconsin devoted exclusively to a discussion of local educational issues. Education Matters is co-hosted by Mike Falkowski, a former KUSD school board member, Sammy Rangel, the life technician and executive director of Life After Hate, Steve Brown, a retired professor of educational leadership, and former Kenosha Unified School superintendent, Joe Manji. Now here's today's Education Matters moderator.
Hello, I'm Karen Sconzert, and the motion reads as follows. Under current law, school districts, independent charter schools, and private schools participating in the parental school choice programs must administer a standardized reading test to certain third grade pupils. Under the bill, a school board, independent charter school operator, or private school participating in the parental school choice building may not promote a third grade pupil enrolled in the school district, including a pupil enrolled in a charter school in the school district, to the fourth grade unless that pupil scores proficient or higher on the test. So the shorthand for this is that it's a flunking policy. And at first hearing, it might sound like a great policy. We don't want kids moving on to fourth grade without being able to read proficiently. So as with many sweeping policies, though, it's really not that simple. And we have a very large scale study of retaining students that was completed nearly 20 years ago in Illinois during a time where there was a similar policy in place. So does it make sense to flunk kids who struggle on a standardized test when they are 8 or 9 years old? What are the benefits to such a policy for kids, schools, and taxpayers? And are there any drawbacks? So for today's guest to discuss this issue is Jenny Nagaoka, who is the deputy director of the UChicago Consortium, where she has conducted research for over 20 years. Her research interests focus on policy and practice in urban education reform, particularly using data to connect research and practice. She is the lead researcher on the To and Through Project, a project that provides educators, policymakers, and families with research data and training on the milestones that matter the most for college success. She is also the lead author of Foundations for Young Adult Success, a developmental framework, which draws on research and practice evidence to build a coherent framework of foundational factors for young adult success. And so I'm really happy to welcome Jenny Nagaoka. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here. It's good to talk to you, Karen.
Yes. So full disclosure, I worked at the UChicago Consortium from 1994 to 2001, and Jenny and I were colleagues briefly for a few of those years. I also interviewed Jenny's colleague, Elaine Allensworth, about a study of the long-term effects of ACT scores and whether they are predictive of college completion. That ACT score interview, like this one, is available to listen to again at WGTD.org on the Education Matters archive page. So welcome again, Jenny. First, please tell us about the policy that Chicago adopted for public school students. When was it put into place and what was the policy?
Sure. So Chicago is one of the first districts or states to really be pushing a retention policy, and they called it ending social promotion. So this is a policy from 25 years ago. So it first went into place fully in 1997. Initially in 1996, enacted for eighth graders, but the full policy didn't happen until 1 year later. So there are three, what we refer to as the gate grades under this policy. So it impacts third graders, sixth graders, and eighth graders. And at the time in 1997, students in those three grades would take the Iowa Test of Basic Skills in spring. If they didn't pass cutoff scores, they would have to attend a summer program called Summer Bridge. They'd have another opportunity to take the test and achieve scores, pass the cutoff scores. And if they didn't pass those, they would have to repeat the grade. For eighth graders who are going to be turning 15, they would actually end up going to what they called transition centers instead of going back to eighth grade because they were considerably older than their peers. And they also were not in regular high schools. There was some discretion given to principals around who would be promoted, but largely, and a few years later, they did start to also use other types of criteria like attendance, grades, homework completion, as other sorts of factors that were used at the end of summer before a student would actually be retained. And currently the policy in the Chicago Public Schools is entirely based on grades and then some other types of discretionary matters, but it's centered around grades as opposed to test scores.
And for those of you who are interested, there's a long discussion of test scores and whether they're predictive of college success specifically, but this is kind of a longstanding issue, is whether test scores are very predictive of much of anything. And so, and the argument is that grades are much more predictive in the same way. I think the analogy that Elaine used when we talked about this a few months ago was that if you were trying to choose football players for your team, and you were only using their time on the 100-meter dash and not all the other things that they do in practice on multiple days over multiple times, you would probably not have a particularly good football team, because the 100-meter dash is only one thing that would tell you anything about their skills as a football player. It's not telling you about a lot of the other things that go into being a good football player. So that's sort of one way to look at it. So tell us, what was the rationale at the time, 25 years ago, for this policy in Chicago? What was the problem that policymakers thought that they would solve by holding kids back a grade at third, sixth, and eighth grade?
High school graduation rates were below 50%. They're now over 80%, so things have changed considerably. But one of the big things that was coming up is that, like, high school teachers and principals were saying that students were coming to them not prepared to do high school level work. So there was this idea that something had to be done to really improve student achievement. And so part of the thought process was being a grade, and that after repeating the grade, they would then sort of be much better off and be better performing going forward. And so a lot of the idea around retention was this whole idea of a kind of this hard accountability of that, you know, what we really need to do is motivate students and teachers to work harder, to get parents more involved, that, you know, part of the issue is that students don't care about school, student or teachers are not sufficiently motivated to be doing their jobs well and to really be trying to support their students in learning. And so, you know, I think this kind of centering the idea that the problem is a lack of effort or a lack of motivation or caring on the part of students, teachers, and their parents. You know, I think there's a lot of question. I think there's also some issues around, especially if you're thinking about third grade students. I mean, to what extent are third graders actually able to respond to motivation and know what it means? Do they means to work harder? Do they really have strategies on how to do that? You know, I mean, I think there are some good things. You know, it's important to be paying attention to the students who are struggling the most. And this is part of the idea is that, you know, a lot of time, I think, especially 25 years ago, schools were largely designed for kind of average achieving students. There were some opportunities for high achieving students, but there really wasn't that much attention being paid to the students who were struggling. And this then did shift attention to these students who actually did need to have something being done differently for them. But, you know, I mean, this was a policy that was really, you know, it was in an age of accountability, and this was accountability for students, right? For for third graders, for sixth graders, and for eighth graders. I think that in Wisconsin is also around who actually isn't doing the job that they're supposed to be doing for students. How are schools performing? Are schools actually being given the kind of resources they actually need to support students well? This idea that this is strictly a problem of motivation, that everybody inside of schools, students included, just need to work harder, is a rather limited way of thinking about what actually needs to be happening and what needs to change inside of schools.
Right. Yeah, I think that this seems like an age-old issue. Like there are some people, I was mentioning to you just before we started recording that, at the beginning of the pandemic, everyone was like, oh, wow, okay, now I sort of see what teachers go through every day because I'm watching it on my kid's screen while we're all here at home. But that quickly shifted. Somehow it became an issue of teachers aren't really working if they're not in their classrooms, even though most of them wanted nothing more than to be in their classrooms. So it's sort of an interesting blame game to play when the questions are probably a lot bigger than that. Yeah. So how does this policy differ from what you know about the Wisconsin policy, which is just the sort of brief bit that we pulled from the bill? And how is it similar?
Yeah, I mean, I think probably one thing to note too is that, the policy in Chicago did evolve over time, even in the time period. So there's a lot of tweaks going on. In Chicago, there were three gate grades. It's third, sixth, and eighth grade. Wisconsin is focused on third grade. So one of the big downsides of what happened in Chicago is that some students ended up being retained multiple times, or even students who were retained in third grade were then, there was a possibility that they would be retained in sixth and eighth grade. And there were even some kids who were retained twice in third grade. So they actually spent 3 years in third grade, which is a lot of time. I think one of the really important differences with how the policy was done in Chicago is that students with disabilities and English language learners were not subject to the policy and having to pass these tests. In Wisconsin, right now the criteria seems to be really strictly based on test scores. There was a lot more discretion allowed in Chicago. Initially, it was sort of kind of very ambiguous about what that meant, but there was discretion at the principal level. There's also some discretion at higher levels too around who would be passed. Later on, the criteria became a little bit clearer about when students, when other criteria like grades, attendance, homework performance would actually be subject to it. I think another thing that Chicago actually really got right was implementing support programs. So I mentioned the Summer Bridge program that Chicago had. So it's like the idea is that, things didn't work out for students during the school year, but they would also provide another opportunity for students to be exposed to the material that they apparently struggled with the first time around. And then, very importantly, be given a second opportunity to take the test and then pass. So there was the idea that the school year was not enough, but given something that is more targeted toward the needs of students who hadn't been able to pass the test cutoff scores, they might learn the material better another time, and that they also had another opportunity to pass the test. Chicago, a little bit later, also started with an after-school program that they called Lighthouse. And so students that either seemed to be, that it seemed like they, given their previous performance, that they may not be likely to actually pass the cutoff scores on the test, were participating, and also students were retained in it. I think one important similarity between the Chicago policy and what is being proposed in Wisconsin is how little how little guidance there is being given on kind of the retained year, like what's supposed to be different the second time around. You know, I think if third grade didn't work out for a student the first time, simply having more of it in the exact same way doesn't seem a particularly likely strategy to begin. You know, there's a lot of specific reasons why students may not have done it, but you know, I think actually trying to understand what may need to be different or what additional supports could actually help students if they are retained is like a critical missing piece in both what Chicago did and what seems to be proposed in Wisconsin.
Right. Dr. Jenny Nagaoka of the University of Chicago Consortium is archived at WGTD.org on the Education Matters page. You are invited to listen again, or you can find our WGTD Education Matters Facebook page and join in a discussion there. I do want to say that I pulled out the one part that's about third grade test scores. There are a few other things in the bill, one of which is to increase the number of teachers that have special reading licenses and are reading specialists. And there's some other things. So it's a little hard to say from the first published bill to the final passed bill, what will end up being in this. But this was the part that sort of grabbed me because I remember doing the research on this. I was, when Jenny was doing this research, this report we're talking about was published 17 years ago. I believe it was the follow-up to the policy. And before that, a few years earlier, I was participating in a project where we talked to a lot of teachers in the schools about the impacts that these various policies were having on their teaching. And one of the things that happened a lot of times is the teachers ended up spending a lot more time teaching to the test and doing something exciting about learning if you were practicing tests all the time. So I don't know if you have any thoughts about that and what the effects might be on students maybe who aren't struggling in these classrooms.
Yeah, I mean, that's so part of the study we did surveys of students and teachers. We also did interviews with students and teachers about their experiences. So we really kind of got a pretty good sense, not just in terms of test scores, what was happening. This is really a big deal in Chicago. I mean, it's kind of, especially in lower achieving, trying to support students in learning, learning what was needed for the test, not what they thought students actually should be learning in third, sixth, and eighth grade, but what they thought they needed to know in order to fix what teachers started to focus on what was covered by the test, how they taught was much more oriented toward tests. They also spent a lot of time on test prep in the sense of test taking skills. So, you know, how do you students are spending on test prep that's actually detrimental to how they perform on tests? So not only is because they're not actually learning, but on the other hand, there were also students who were sort of demotivated by this because they felt like they had no chance to pass the test. It's like it was this test score barrier looming in front of them that they really didn't have any sense of how they would be able to pass it. But another thing that came up in the qualitative work was just how important the role of teachers really was in how students thought about the test. Like, was this something that really helped them motivate it? Did teachers actually create an environment where students felt supported and that they were sort of working together to help students pass the test? Because I think one thing too that I think is really important to remember about a policy like this is that it's not just going to be affecting the students who end up being retained, especially in the low achieving schools. This is some coaching their instruction. So this may seem like a relatively narrow policy that's about super low achieving students, but actually if it also affects the other students who are in those schools and in those classrooms.
Possibly so narrow that it's hard to catch up. So you sort of do want to go to third grade or earlier to identify students, but they are not really so much in control of their own motivation at that point. Some of them can be motivated, but they don't really understand. Just telling them you can't watch TV or you can't play with your iPad unless you do well on this thing is, what were the findings about the policy? Were a lot of students held back? What happened to the ones who were? What happened to the ones who passed and moved on? Did anybody get, you know, retained?
10% of sixth graders and eighth graders were retained in the first 3 years of the policy. These don't be on the plus side across the board. Test scores, more and more students were actually passing the cutoff scores on the Iowa tests, and test scores did go up. So there was some changes in what was happening on the test scores. But I think, you know, what happened to the students who were retained? And, you know, one of the ways that one of the critical ways that we approached this question was thinking about, like, what do you actually want for these retained students? Who are you going to compare them to? Are you trying to have these students who've spent 2 years in the same grade and seeing, are they doing as well as, like, similar classmates? Or are you saying, are they, you know, what we found is that
another grade, that means you're attacking an extra year at whatever the cost of that year is onto the end of their schooling. It's not like they repeat third grade and then they skip fourth grade. They just keep going through. So if they're in school from K through 12, that's 13 years of schooling that we're paying for at whatever the rate is, which is something like $11,000 or $12,000 a year right now in Wisconsin. If they are retained, then that means that you have to do that again. So basically you're talking about $12,000 a year or whatever the cost is by the time they're in 12th grade.
For this, for these students. And there's also, you know, even if everything goes completely well, but they're actually learning less in their retained year than what we would estimate these students would have learned had they been promoted. And I think the other thing to think about too is we didn't look at this for third and sixth graders, but for eighth graders who had been retained, they also were a little bit more likely to be dropping out of high school. So that's another way that this creates, you know, both, you know, some consequences for the negative effects of this policy, whereas other students may be benefiting slightly from mm-hmm. this, at least strictly in terms of graduation and test scores. I think one other, there are a couple of other kind of probably somewhat less intended consequences of this policy. Another thing too is that we also saw more students being retained prior to third grade. So because teachers in kindergarten, first and second grade knew that this third grade test score, you know, the possibility of retainment was coming up, they actually started retaining more students in the earlier grade. So it's not
standardized testing policy to have students repeat kindergarten and first grade. Is there any, does that make any sense? Like, should that be where our focus is on those early grades? And does retention at early grades help? Or is there some other effective way of intervening if students are having difficulty learning to read?
I mean, I think, you know, that's kind of an interesting question, because I think, you know, in some ways, like, we have certain milestones, you know, besides test scores that we think students should be hitting, and some students may end up being retained. But I think, you know, one thing that we know about development is that it's not as evenly paced as we think it should be. Students develop at different rates. They learn at different rates. This isn't something that's just this clear linear trajectory that is going to be the same at all times. And so, you know, quite often a student may be struggling and be behind developmentally or even in their learning progress in first grade, but they undergo, you know, a spurt, and suddenly they are at a much more similar place to their classmates. And so I think it's, you know, there may be specific circumstances where it makes sense, but a lot of times, you know, time will allow things to even out. And, you know, what's more important is not to sort of say just repeating a grade again will make a difference, but the idea of what students need to be, like, what students need to have learned and what they need to be able to do. And test scores are really narrow. And it's just really important to make sure that students are being seen more holistically and thinking about what they need. Because that is like one of the things too that happened. I mean, you sort of talked a little bit about how teachers narrowed what they were teaching, but it also just meant like the purpose of school for students and teachers narrowed in a lot of what thought they were successful or a failure. And it really started to define what, like, why school mattered and what the purpose of schooling was simply about tests. And we know that really what is to not be narrowed down to something that is as small as a test score. Like, test scores provide information and they have their place, but they should not be the only way that we define whether or not a student is going to be successful in the long term or what the purpose of schooling actually is.
I, 1 12-month period to develop in exactly the same way. We know that there are big differences between the kids that are born in September and the ones that are born in June, because that's a big period of time when you're a little kid. So it's sort of that's sort of an interesting thing that we continue to use that as our benchmark, is when you were born, as opposed to where you are in developmental track. So if you had a member of the Wisconsin legislature here today talking with us, maybe they would just zoom in with us for a few minutes. What advice would you give them on this policy, and what alternatives would you recommend to holding students back in third grade based on test scores?
I mean, you know, one is like, you know, we didn't find any evidence that retaining students helped them at all. Some students and some families, but that is not, I think it's a misidentification of the fundamental issue that we're trying to address, you know, helping students do better in school and helping teachers be more effective. You know, what's really going to matter is the kind of investments that we're making in schools. Are we helping teachers actually had the time to go at the pace and to sort of understand what students actually needed in order to be successful? So I think that sort of points to, there were some good things about summer school in Chicago, but what can we learn from that sort of experience and apply it to the regular school year so that we don't have to be retaining students, that students are able to be successful? So I think, and I think a big piece of the retention, we're placing all the consequences on children, as opposed to really thinking about, you know, how can we do a better job of serving students?
Great. So we're out of time, as often happens. How can listeners access this 2004 report?
Been listening to Education Matters, heard each Saturday morning at 10:30 on WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. Archive.